Welcome. Today I have the great honor of doing an interview with Mr. Robert Kearns. He is the chairman and founder of Ireland Park Foundation. In addition, Mr. Kearns is also the president and founder of Kearns Insurance Corporation and Kearns Investment Corporation. Originally from Dublin, he graduated with a Bachelor's of Arts degree in Archaeology and Greek, along with Roman Civilization, from University College Dublin, before immigrating to Canada in 1979. Mr. Kearns also serves on the board here at the NATO Association of Canada. Mr. Kearns has served as chairman of the Campaign for Celtic Studies at St. Michael's College at the University of Toronto and was conferred with an honorary fellowship for his service to the university in 2009. He was also director of the Halifax Aircraft Association, a 10-year project with Canadian veterans to restore a World War II Halifax bomber to commemorate the 10,000 Canadians who failed to return from their service with Bomber Command. He has established the Welland Press Publishing House to publish a new book in the spring of 2016 that tells the story of the recovery and restoration of the Halifax aircraft NA-337, which is on display in the National Air Force Museum of Canada in Trenton, Ontario. I'd like to begin by thanking you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to do this interview with me today, Mr. Kearns.
Thank you, Magdalena. Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm honored to be invited to participate in the interview, and I look forward to it.
Absolutely. Mr. Kearns, as the chairman and founder of Ireland Park Foundation, please begin by telling us more about the significance and the impact of the work that you do.
Well, I became involved with the Irish Canadian community in a volunteer capacity in May 1980. And I've always felt that it was important to explore the contribution made to Canada by people from all parts of the island of Ireland over the whole journey of the involvement of the two countries. I mean, it goes back at least 500 years. So much of it is little understood, much of it is ambiguous, and much of it is also misconstrued. And so in the 1980s, I was very much involved with the Ireland Fund of Canada. I was chairman from 1989 to 1992. And much of that period in the 1980s saw tremendous strife in Northern Ireland. And just as in the past, during the period of the Home Rule Bills in the British Parliament in the 1880s, 1890s, and the Home Rule legislation brought in but never enacted in 1914, Canada has always taken a great interest in Irish political affairs. So a better understanding of that, I thought, would be, wonderful to establish over the course of time here in Canada. So in the work I was doing with the Ireland Fund, it was difficult to raise money for the Ireland Fund because the money was going to Ireland. And so the fruit of labor wasn't obviously manifest here in Canada. And to create awareness and pride in one's Irish-Canadian history, it seemed that it was really important to create awareness here in Canada of defining moments in the history of the two countries. And the defining moment really is probably the summer of 1847, when just under 100,000 men, women and children from all parts of the island of Ireland set out in the Atlantic to escape the catastrophic failure of the potato crop and the famine in Ireland, which was the longest and most continuous famine in European history, lasting from June 1845 until 1851. Population of the country shrank from about 8.25 million people to just over 5 million people in that six-year period. So 100,000 arrived in Canada. Well, not all of them arrived. About 20% of them died at sea or shortly after arrival. And it altered the perception of Irish people in Canada from that which had existed prior to the famine, because about 500,000 had migrated to Canada between 1815 and 1845. And they were well settled throughout Canada, especially in Ontario and Quebec and Montreal and even here in Toronto. But they never formed, shall we say, the ghettoization of the Irish community as, for example, in Boston or New York or Chicago, because they were widely diffused across the landscape in farming communities. So they didn't have a great deal of political leverage, but they were involved in politics, of course. And, of course, D'Arcy McGee would be the prime example of that. But the Baldwin family, who had come in 1801, were also very instrumental in bringing orderly government to the Canadas. And Baldwin and LaFontaine's contribution to democracy and government in this country is foundational. More work, I think, needs to be done to celebrate that contribution, but that's for future years. So the story of the famine in Toronto was completely lost. I became aware of it shortly after starting the process to create the Irish Famine Memorial Park, which really began in 1995. I'd started to read a bit more about the famine in Canada, in Ireland and in Canada, and Canada's response to it in 1991 on a visit to Quebec City. And I found that it was an extraordinary response on the part of the people of Canada, because the United States had imposed very stiff fines on ship's captains who brought passengers with ship fever, as they call it. We now know it as typhus or cholera. So more and more of the ships came up to Canada, to the St. Lawrence, where they were quarantined on the island of Grosse Île, and then moved onwards if they passed through quarantine to Montreal and then down through the Great Lakes to Toronto. And many of them travelled onwards to the United States. Basically, they were getting into the United States via the back door of the Great Lakes. So Toronto had a population of about 20,000 in that summer of 1847, when 38,500 migrants arrived on the Toronto waterfront. So to this very day, it's still the largest single loss of life to any one cause in the history of the city when expressed as a percentage of the population. And what we are now discovering in our current research is the role of local Canadians in coming forward and risking their lives to help these migrants. And that will result in the opening of a second park at the corner of Widmer and Adelaide Street in June of next year.
Robert, I want to mention that the work that you do at Ireland Park Foundation serves an important purpose in the community, because educating the public about the ongoing issues and the struggles that Irish people have faced in history plays a significant role, not only in educating people about the past, but also educating people about the role that Irish Canadians play in Canada and internationally. And not too long ago, you had an event put on by the Ireland Park Foundation. I had an opportunity to meet you there, along with various members who took part in the event as representatives of the NATO Association of Canada. Can you tell us a bit more about the past event that you had for members of the community?
Well, we had a visit from an extraordinary individual called Michael Collins. And Michael is a super athlete. He ran 30 marathons in 30 days. And he's summited at Mount Everest. He's been to the North Pole, the South Pole, to Antarctica. And he's involved himself in some truly extraordinary feats of athleticism. And he's he's president of the Irish 100-kilometer club. So he runs fast distances. It's quite extraordinary. So he visited Ireland Park and was moved by the experience of the sculptures, the limestone sculptural wall, the glass tower, and the five bronze figures, and the presence and location of the site. And he decided to explore further the story of Irish migration to Canada. So his journey was being followed by the Irish newspapers as well as by the Globe and Mail. And it's an extraordinary story of his journey from Grosse Île, 995 kilometres in 30 days, and travelling through Quebec City and through Montreal. There are 6,000 men, women and children buried in a communal grave at Pointe Saint-Charles in Montreal, which is, again, little known or understood, and 4,500 on the island of Grosse Île. And he came through Kingston, where there's about 1,440, and then made his way to Toronto, where we have about 1,185 men, women and children buried here. So he wanted to create greater awareness, not just in Canada, but also in Ireland, of the fact that Canada always took Irish migrants in when other countries would not. And certainly I believe he shares the view of our foundation that the response to the Irish famine and migrants was really a defining moment in Canada's early history. Indeed, it was exactly 20 years prior to Confederation, but the response was generous and it was typically Canadian. People were very courageous. They came forward and volunteered to help the migrants, and many of them lost their lives.
You have many opportunities to engage with the public. So with the work that you do, what would you say are some of the most rewarding and challenging aspects associated with being the chairman and founder of Ireland Park Foundation?
Well, the challenge, of course, is always to raise money.
Yes.
So can't go very far without that. So people run across the street when they see
you. When they see you.
Don't shake that guy's hand, it cost you $5,000. The challenge is to raise money, because without that one can't maintain one's operations, one can't create parks and public art, one can't fund research. So I actually derive a great deal of pleasure and enjoyment, when I can take the time to do it, to seek out and connect with Irish Canadians who perhaps have never really fully understood or embraced their Irish heritage, and the process of educating them on that heritage and their and opening up doors and avenues for them to connect with where their family had originated from on the island of Ireland, that then leads forward to their involvement sometimes in the foundation and then making a financial contribution. I find that very rewarding. It's like observing an undergraduate coming into a university and watching them graduate with a master's degree. So I do this because I would describe myself as a proud Irishman, but a patriotic Canadian. Well, not but and a patriotic Canadian. And I think they're mutually complementary. I see one going hand in hand with the other.
And on top of all of the work that you do for Ireland Park Foundation, along with being a member of the board at the NATO Association of Canada, you are also the chairman and founder of Kearns Edgewater Financial Services Incorporated. What would you say have been some of your most memorable moments?
Well, probably deciding to enter the Canadian life insurance industry back in 1980, a very terrifying prospect, as I had emigrated to Canada in November 79 with a degree in archaeology and Greek and Roman civilization. And I had then spent a year teaching in Dublin in a secondary school and then 2 years in the ladies' fashion industry. So to come from that to Toronto and then enter a business selling life insurance was a challenge, because I didn't know anyone here. And it is a people business, so one had to meet people pretty quickly or one was going to starve. So I found that to be a tremendous challenge, but I enjoyed the process of meeting people. And my dad had spent his lifetime in the Irish Civil Service in the Department of Social Welfare. So I grew up around a dinner table where stories of helping people was common fare. And I felt that in entering the Canadian life insurance business, that it was something very worthwhile, that one was there with a check when people desperately needed, either due to an illness or demise. And so I've enjoyed it immensely, and it was a great challenge. I mean, I very nearly didn't survive on a number of occasions, but the gods intervened, I think, and decided that, you know, I would survive. And, you know, after the first 1 or 2 years, it became a lot easier. And so I've been doing it now for 36 years, and I enjoy it immensely. And it's really been a journey where I've met wonderful people. I have two terrific partners and three terrific staff members in our office who I couldn't function without. And so we've very close relationships with many, many of our clients. And it's a very pleasurable and rewarding career.
Robert, on top of being a member of the board at the NATO Association of Canada, you are someone who's committed to not only helping the community, but you're committed to engaging with individuals one-on-one. So with your experience serving as a member of the board here at the NATO Association of Canada, Can you please discuss the significance and the impact of the work that's being done by the association?
Well, we're at a very, very interesting point in time. It's really, we're at the hinge of history, is an expression very often used. And, you know, in my lifetime, we've known really only peace in the Western world. Our parents and grandparents fought two world wars. Now we are involved in a new face-off along the Eastern European border with a resurgent Russia, led by a man who has very questionable moral scruples. He is rearming and he is adopting an aggressive posture. Meanwhile, within Europe, we face many challenges, all of which are internal, of resurgent nationalism, racism, and economic problems brought on by very lax governance and compliance rules in the financial sector, which has led to tremendous austerity. And then at this colossal wave of migration from the Middle East and North Africa into Europe, it's very destabilizing. Simultaneously, we have you know, a very divisive situation, both socially and politically in the United States. And in the Far East, we have an expansionary China that's deciding to select which treaties it will honor and which ones it won't when it's convenient for them. So, for example, the decision last week declare as unlawful the Chinese occupation of the Spratly Islands or coral reefs is pretty outrageous. So it remains to be seen how these threatening postures are dealt with. So I think it's very important that organizations like NATO educate our public through research, through scholarly papers, to alert our political leaders, our business leaders, that we must tread very carefully and confront these issues, because kicking them down the road with appeasement or similarly being too confrontational could trigger another calamity a la 1914. And we certainly don't want a repeat of that led onwards then to September 1939.